ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 तस्यापि
तस्यापि
भगवान् सक्षाद् भ्रममयो हरिः अंशां सेना चतुर्भगात् पुत्रवम् प्रार्थिता सुराय रामा लक्ष्मण भरता शत्रुघ्न इति संज्ञया तस्यापि भगवान्
एष
सक्षद्भ्रममयो
हरिः
हंसासेन चतुर्धागात् पुत्रवं
प्रतितस्युरैः
रामलक्ष्मणभरता शत्रुघ्ना इति
संज्ञया
अभिम महाराज दशरथ अपि also भगवान् the supreme personality of Godhead
Esha
all of them Shakshat
directly
Brahmamaya the supreme Paramatma the absolute truth
Hari
the supreme personality of Godhead
Amsha Amsena
by an expansion of a plenary portion
Chaturdha
by fourfold expansions
Agata
accepted.
Putratvam
sonhood
Prarthita
being prayed for
Surai
by the demigods
Rama
Lord Ramachandra.
Lakshmana
Lord Lakshmana.
Bharata
Lord Bharata Shatrughna and Lord Shatrughna. Iti thus Samyaya by different names. Translation. Being prayed for by the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth Himself, directly appeared with His expansion and expansions of the expansion. Their holy names are Rama, Lakshmana, Bharata, and Shatrughna. These celebrated incarnations thus appeared in four forms as the sons of Maharaj Dasharatha. Purport. Lord Ramachandra and his brothers, Lakshman, Bharata, and Shatrughna, are all Vishnu Tattva, not Jiva Tattva. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expands into many, many forms. Advaitam, Achutam, Anadim, Anantarupam. Although they are one and the same, Vishnu Tattva has many forms and incarnations. As confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, 539, Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishtan. The Lord is situated in many forms, such as Rama, Lakshmana, Bharata, and Shatrughna. And these forms may exist in any part of His creation. All these forms exist permanently, eternally, as individual personalities of Godhead. And they resemble many candles, all equally powerful. Lord Ramachandra, Lakshman, Bharata, and Shatrughna, who, being Vishnu Tattva, are all equally powerful, became the sons of Maharaj Dasarath in response to prayers by the demigods. So now in this dynasty that is coming down of the kings, now we have gotten down to Lord Ramachandra and his brothers. So Lord Ramachandra is the original personality of Godhead, and then he expands as Lakshman, and Lakshman expands as Pradyumna and Aniruddha. So these four aspects of the personality of Godhead, then those are eternal and always existent. And these four terms, these four forms, then are always performing all the various duties in the universe or in the cosmic creation. Vasudeva is always performing wonderful pastimes. Sankarshan is always establishing the religious principles, you know, correcting and punishing those who are misbehaving. Pradyumna is always attracting the living entities, either to the material energy, if that's their desire, or to himself, if they are interested in the spiritual upliftment. And Aniruddha is always setting the proper example, the, you know, setting the standards by which others may perform their activities. So these four activities are always being performed by the Supreme Lord. And all of these are equally powerful, though they take different moods, different flavors, but still they're all the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they are eternally, always eternally manifest, and they are equally as powerful. So this is the point Srila Prabhupada is making here, is that they, all these different expansions of the Supreme Lord are the Supreme Lord himself. They're non-different. There's no difference between them. There will be some difference in the mood, but that's not a difference in the potency or position. To perform various activities, then the Lord has taken so many forms so that he may interact with the devotees. As we see, as he has, with the prayer of the demigods, then the Lord has come. Because the devotees are asking for him to come, then he is manifest. So this is the position. The Lord's manifestation is based on the desire of the devotees. The devotees desire him to appear, and then the Lord, he then manifests. Otherwise, then there is nothing for him to do in this world or anywhere, because he, being the Supreme Lord, he being the origin of everything, then there's no need for him to do anything. Krishna mentions this in the Gita, that there's no work for him to do. There's nothing for him to do. So then, but to set proper example, and more specifically to interact with his devotees, then he comes to perform his pastimes. Otherwise, he himself has no duty. Right? God has no duty to perform, because everything is coming from him. But others in this world have duties to perform. So if God didn't perform duties, no one else would perform any duties. And if no one else performed duties, then the whole universe, nothing would happen. It would just, you know, fall into disarray. Everything works because people perform their duties. You perform your proper duty, then you get a proper result. That proper result, then one progresses in the material world. It's a very interesting phenomenon. It's, you know, it's just, if one person does something, then another person, if they do, if everyone's busy, then the whole thing is prosperous. And if nobody does anything, then nothing works. So we see prosperity is depending upon work. And if the work is proper, then the prosperity is proper. And if the work is improper, then prosperity is lost. So for people to prosper in this world, then they must be active. And to be active, then Krishna sets the example. He shows how one should act in this world. Then the people will be benefited. So these activities then are performed by the Lord, not because he has to do them, because others need to interact with him. And they will only do that if they see the proper example. Then everything becomes very good. Are there any questions on this?
Yes. In the beginning you were saying about Pradyumna and Aniruddha.
You say it loudly?
In the beginning you were speaking about Pradyumna and Aniruddha. So So I think you can see their functions in the same. So Pradyumna is attracting everyone to himself or to energy and in the ways.
Setting example. The question is just on the duties of the four, or the activities of the four expansions of the Lord. See, there's always these means. See, in the Lord's mind, there's no real difference in all these. But for us to attain to the position of getting out of this material world and getting established in on love for Krishna, then there is a need for proper knowledge and proper understanding. So then the living entity in this world, then this understanding is broken down into three categories: sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana, or relationship, process, and result. So then in that, then there's many things that have to be established for the living entity so that they can function. Because in the spiritual world, these three potencies, the sandini, sambit, and bladini potencies, then they are perfectly blended and create the wonderful situation and atmosphere of Krishna's pastimes. But in this material world, then there is a problem, because people don't understand these principles, and because of not understanding these principles, they don't know how to act. They don't know what is relationship. They don't know what is goal. So that's why things are a mess nowadays. People think sense gratification is a goal. Therefore, they perform the wrong activities and their relationship with something is wrong. Right? So they don't actually know what's going on. Though they claim to know. They're very expert at doing what they don't know what's going on. But at the same time, as they're not getting a result that they expect. See, their idea is they will become happy and avoid distress. So they're very expert at getting things done in certain ways, and make nice roads, nice cars, nice gadgets and gizmos, you know, amazing economic platforms based on absolute illusion, all these things they can make. But no one is becoming happy. You've heard of it. You heard, oh, there's 600 Indian billionaires in Silicon Valley, so I can also become billionaire. They must be so happy, right? But you go, all those 600, they're all having problems. Their wives are leaving them. Their kids are walking out of them. They're all drug addicts. They're having so much problem. The government's after them. The business is closing. They're each trying to cut each other's throat. You know, so they're not happy. But there's an idea that their people are happy. We've heard about it. Experienced, you know, a few moments. If we think back of all our happiest moments in our life, then what is the term? We don't say, we don't ask somebody, what was the happiest time in your life? Right? We ask, when was the happiest moment in your life? Right? Because it's a moment. It's all. It's a moment. That's all the more there is. So, now and again, there's a few moments. You add them up, maybe if you're lucky, you get 1 minute of, you know, happiness in your whole lifetime. If you're lucky. You know, maybe a few more minutes, maybe 5 minutes, okay. 5 minutes compared to 100 years, okay, or 50 years, or whatever. So, it's moments. So people don't understand these things. So, therefore, then Krishna comes to establish these things very clearly. You have to know what is your relationship with something. If you don't know your relationship, you can't establish a goal, right? You know, it's just like I decide myself and this table, hey, let's drive on over to Navadvip. You know? It's not a car, it's a table. You know? So, you have to know what is the relationship. Then only you can set a goal. And once a goal is set, then you know what activity to do to get that goal. So therefore, then we see is that Sankarshan and Pradyumna, they are establishing the principles of relationship. Sankarshan is what is the rules, what's proper and what's not proper to do. And once that's established, then Pradyumna is the attractiveness. If you're not attracted to a relationship, you don't go to the next stage of needing that relationship, or the results of that relationship. Right? So Aniruddha is the goal of that relationship. And And Vasudeva is the activities of that relationship. So then, like that, we see then they establish the principles on which human society can function properly, like that. Because everything's broken down into these three. If you don't know these three, you absolutely don't know what you're talking about or what you're doing. It doesn't matter who you are or who you think you are. You don't know. Without these three, you don't know what's going on. Some people, by karma, they do the right things, but they don't know what's going on. They know what to say, at what time, what to do, what not to do, how to make that endeavor, how to set their, their short-term and long-term goals. But that's not because they actually know what's going on. That's just by karma they're doing it. Right? So the whole thing, and even if we get books and we read about it, but unless you understand how to connect it to the Lord, you actually don't know what's happening. Because it's the Lord that sets these. He is relationship. He is process. He is goal. So unless you know Him in the equation, you don't actually know these three. Therefore, the Lord comes as establishes these. Does that make sense? Yes.
This is kind of a material prosperity. We have the Western goal. Is that an improper or mixed result? As you explained before, the result of material prosperity, of about doing your duties. For how, if you do it in proper way, for how long that material result will be there?
It means the question is about Western material prosperity, the modern material prosperity. Is that how, what is that result of and how long will it last? You see, everything comes out of activity, like that. If there's an activity, then you get a result. With no activity, there's no result. So then the activity then should be based, if it's based on a proper motive, then it gives a good result. If it's based on an improper motive, it gives a bad result. So it's not so much the activity, it's what's the motive behind it. Just like the criminal is killing people, and the soldier is killing people. But for one will end up in jail, and the other will get a medal, will be honored. So it's more as what is the mood of performing that activity. So that is established then, that's the mental platform. The senses are engaged, but according to the mental platform. So the mental platform is ruled by religion. So if one's activities are properly ruled by authorized religion, then the result will give a prosperous result. I mean, the result will be gained as prosperous. But if it's not based on religious principles, it's based on their own idea, it means it'll still come from the mind. It's still the platform of mind, but whether it's authorized activities of the mind or our own made-up activities of the mind. So we have our own philosophy, it will not get a good result. But if it's based on religious principles, it will. So therefore, whatever prosperity we see in whoever is prosperous is because of previous good activity. They've done proper pious results before, and now they're receiving them. But if they take up improper activities, then maximum can last is 3 generations. Maximum. Generally, in one's own, the person who's performing the improper activities, in his own life, it will start to crumble. But even if it doesn't, if the activities from previous were so great that it won't crumble in his lifetime, then his grandchild, it will finish in his lifetime. So he's rich, but his grandchild will be poor. But generally we see it goes in their lifetime or their son's lifetime. But maximum, if it's really great piety, it'll go to the grandchild. That's the maximum it can go. Is that?
So you're saying the prosperity of Western world is basically the previous combination of good actions, yes. And they get the result now.
Yeah. It means it mentions in the 11th canto, question is on, so Western prosperity is coming from previous activities. It mentions in the 11th canto that people who are pious but not religious, really, or have much so much faith or understanding or even interest in God, then it's enough piety to maintain human birth, but not enough to maintain human birth in India, where they actually have proper knowledge of the Lord from the scriptures, authorized knowledge. So therefore they take birth outside of India. In the, you know, the cultures that they just don't know. They just don't know who's God, what's going on, what's actual religion, what's not, and this and that. A little bit of glimmer is there. Something is there. But it's very minimal because they didn't have interest in it. Therefore, they're born into a situation where the knowledge is not available. You're born into a situation of people who aren't interested. Like that. And maybe some, you know, some more sentiment, less sentiment, but knowledge is practically nothing. And the culture doesn't work so much on religious principles as it does on just sense gratification. At best, extended sense gratification. So there's justice, there's some respect, there's economics, there's these kind of things. People are nice to each other because they know if you're not nice to the guy today, tomorrow he may be bigger than you and get you back. So therefore, everybody behaves properly. But it's not actually on the religious platform. The Western religion, the non-Vedic religions, technically aren't religion. They're sub-religion, because they only deal with senses and dealings on the economic platform. They don't really get into proper restrictions based on the proper religious principles of the soul. And they're just below that. They're connected. Because even in the Vedic culture, those things are there. Economics is part of it. But it's based on religious principles, and the religious principles are based on spiritual principles, and the spiritual principles are based on devotional principles. So like that, it expands. But in the West, they don't know this, so like that. So therefore, the piety that they would have performed here, they would be reaping the results there, like that, in the next birth. And if they use it properly or take up, you know, proper religious principles, then that may elevate them. But if not, then they'll just degrade further. Like that. Because the Shastra only mentions that a not well-utilized human birth in India can still maintain a human birth outside India. It doesn't mention a human birth outside India can maintain human birth. Generally from there, then it goes down. So,
from the sadhu mind comes first, the attitude to perform any kind of activity. Nowadays, with the movement of transportation and visas, depending on the desire, if the desire grows to become more materialistic, people also go out of India.
Yeah,
and also people who by desire can come into India.
Yeah,
at the same lifetime. This from the same, coming from the same backward desire.
Yeah, basically. But it means it's also, the question is that just as now, because there's so much movement of people and that, you know, the, what do you call it? Global village, right? You know, like that. Maybe they should call it the global zoo. Maybe that would be better, a more appropriate term. Whatever. There's some globalness is there. And so people are coming into India with interest, people are going out. Yeah, it would be. There's association is more important, because taking up devotional service, because here we're talking just pure piety only, religious principles. Means if one is taking up devotional principles, that's because of association with those who are following those devotional principles, and they come and give those to you. So because they value it, they give them to you, you value it, then people are coming to India. And then by association with those in India who have a good situation may give that up by bad association. Or it's just they had just enough to be born in India. You know, it's like, let us say you have great piety, and that piety would manifest, let's say, as musical ability. If it's very great, then one would appear like a Gandharva. If it's not so great, then one would take birth here. But still, if there's some, still, there's a lot of piety left, but not enough to keep you in the Gandharva plans, then you would be here known as a great musician. And if you don't have much piety that way, then you're just some guy who plays a little something now and again, but, you know, nobody cares, you know. Like, your mother just shouts down the stairs to shut up now and again. Like that. So therefore, it may be just enough, and therefore they go out. But a lot of it's also association. But that they would take certain association, leave other association, is also a lot of times based on their previous desire. See, except for devotional service, anything else material is just based on previous activities. That's all. It's not based on something else. It's mechanical. But devotional service is not. Taking up devotional service is out of that situation. So, therefore, that is gained from devotees by the grace of the devotees. And when that enough of their grace accumulates, then we take up seriously the devotional process. Like that. Otherwise, then, by association, you do an activity, you want to do that activity again. So you've done something devotional, you like it, you'll want to do it again. So when that increases, then it comes to the point where the faith becomes more fixed, and then one wants to associate more with the devotees, be more established. So it's a different process. Yeah, but it's still based on activity, but that activity has been given to us by the devotees. It's been given to us by the devotees. Yeah.
India became available by the power.
Yes, coming to India, because we're not coming to India generally the land of material piety, we're coming to the land of spiritual opportunity, like that. You know, so that is there. But the other pious, the religious aspects are there, and Prabhupada was hoping that we would see them and gain something from them to understand the culture. So we would include that culture within our performance of devotional activities. Because we see devotees are very interested in the need of economic development, social interaction, these things, and they're not spiritual, they're material. But if you engage them in Krishna's service, they become spiritualized. So therefore, the idea is then you should learn what is the better quality of material activities that are more pleasantly engaged in Krishna's service. You know, just like it's more easy to engage a very pleasant, pious family atmosphere and remember Krishna, in one sense, you know, more pleasantly in Krishna's service, than a family situation where each member of the family is at each other's throats and, you know, can't wait till the other one leaves the house. You know? So there, we may get caught up in the distress of the things and then hanker for that natural, material human needs, you know, of pleasant interactions and interdependency and all that. So because of that, then you see, you know, devotees go on for, you know, 20, 30 years, and then when they're, you know, 40, 50 in the time of their natural retirement into, you know, dynamic spiritual activities, that's when they become serious householders. You know, but after three marriages and fighting the universe and all that, they've mellowed down enough that they can actually interact with family members without killing each other. So, you know, better late than never, but, you know. But the problem is that it's weakened. So then once seriously getting involved without any encumbrance will come 10, 20, 30 years late, as long as you last that long, you know. So, but whatever it is, they've come to kind of like appreciate more of the association and all that. So that's good.
In a sense, whatever spiritual activity is doing, this particular generation also is going to be reaped by the next generation.
Yeah, naturally. It's like the first generation, they are accepting a culture. So it's basically intellectual for them. And by practice, then it actually starts to become their culture. You know, whatever aspects of it that they focus on, you know, but not necessarily all the aspects. The second generation, Krishna consciousness, as is being practiced, is their culture. Right? And so then as they think about it and value it and take it, then they'll expand it and refine it. So then the third generation, they will actually have, you know, the traditional...
Yeah, they'll actually have what's the culture that Prabhupada's talking about. Like that. So the third generation is a generation that will culturally work properly. But spiritually, it doesn't matter. You have a miserable life or have a wonderful life. It doesn't matter. As long as you think you're Christian, you go back to God. Like, that's the point. You know? Because if everything's wonderful, then the tendency is you might forget also. Like that. So you have to have an environment in which it's naturally wonderful, but it's focused on Krishna. Right? So this is the thing. Is the first generation oscillates between thinking of Krishna exclusively and has absolutely nothing to do with proper relationships with others. Or, you know, they're engaged in wonderful new age relationships with each other and has absolutely nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. So until one can kind of like use Vedic principles of relationship and maintain Krishna consciousness, then you'll have a functioning, visible, you know, viable, sustainable, all these nice words, society. Yeah. Like that. But since the purpose of this mission is to go back to Godhead, that's secondary. Like that. You'll find many people due to miserable, you know, household and economic life have become great devotees.
And the society is down.
Yeah, the society is down. The problem is because the Vedic system is functioning on actually spiritual principles, is if they ignore them or go against them, they actually weaken the spiritual principles. Like we get into mundane some interactions and criticalness and justice and all these different things. The problem is then we're breaking the principle of Vaishnava association and appreciation of devotees, criticizing devotees. We're talking about these things and they're not worth talking about. Like that. If it has something to do with you or something that it has something to do with your life that you can gain from it, yes. But if it's not, if it's just something to talk about, then the samskara that we're taking into our mind is all bad. This one did this, that one did that, that one did this, and then after a while you find those people are doing those things. Yeah, so Brahmika. So therefore it creates a weakness also on the spiritual platform. Because in the Vedic, then you would appreciate people, you would this, that, even though it may be artificial. Many times the Westerners claim that the Indians and their culture is very artificial. They're just being nice to your face and behind your back, this, that. But at least they can be nice to your face. You know, it's kind of like the person who smokes telling the person who doesn't smoke, well, you're not free to do as you like. I can smoke, you can't smoke. But actually, it's the other way around. The person that's smoking can't not smoke. The person who's not smoking could if he wants, but he's chosen not to. So Westerners will say the Indians are superficial and external. But they can do it. The Westerners can do it. They can't do it. Say what they like, they can't do it. Push their buttons and see what happens. They explode. That's all. You know. But the Indian, he'll be nice and all that. He'll walk out of the room and get you behind your back. But he can hold it together. So that ability to hold it together means if you could make them Krishna conscious, they already have social tolerance and social well behavior. And then they'll purify the other. But the Westerners don't have it. They don't know how to behave with somebody. You know, it's like one minute you're best of friends, the next minute they're yelling and screaming at each other and ready to kill each other, and then the next minute you're supposed to be best friends again. You know, this isn't human life. Dogs do that. They bark, growl, snap, this, that, and then the next minute they're all walking around smelling everything together and having a good time. You know, but human life, you don't do that. You have a relationship, that relationship maintains, and based on that, you'll act. You know?
Yes, sir. A few days ago, I went to Calcutta, and I climbed in an elevator that was very small. And we were having a nice conversation, even though five different people were here, we were having a conversation. In America, we have these huge elevators, and everybody's with sunglasses.
Yeah, don't.
They don't talk.
Yeah, they don't talk. It's either who knows. Yeah, it's not. So that's the weakness. But the point is it doesn't matter, because that's the conditioned nature. That's the beauty of it, is that the systems of karma, jnana, and yoga, if you don't have perfect social activities going on, the system doesn't function. But Krishna consciousness, because it's outside of that loop, it functions even despite it. You know, that's why it says, even a child can do it, even an animal can do it. Right? There's examples in our scriptures of animals going back to Godhead. Animals, trees, you know, birds. There's that one story, the sage was sitting and meditating for a long time on Vishnu and that, and then one day as he's sitting there, then this bird was in this tree, and this hunter shot the bird with an arrow. And the bird fell on the ground and was flapping its wings and went around this little clump of grass and went around three times and then died and then got four arms and went back to Godhead. You know, and the sage is sitting there watching that and going, wow, what's this? So he thought, wow, something must be in this clump of grass. He checked, it was a Shali Gamshiva. Right? So this bird had done circumambulated the Lord three times before dying and went back to Godhead. You know? And the sage was there doing all this meditation and everything and was not getting anywhere. So he wondered why this is, you know. And it was because of, you know, his attitude is this, is that. Well, the bird had no attitude. It was in distress. It rendered service to the Lord and went back to God. So that's the beauty of it. We say all these heavy things, but that's just to wake us up to the point that if we would just take the culture and that the Prabhupada says, it would make life easier. So much of our problems that we find ourselves embroiled in these days are simply social things that are taken care of in the Vedic culture. They're not actually spiritual problems. This movement doesn't have spiritual problems. People will say this movement is that there are no spiritual problems. Maybe philosophical, Ritvik, or this, that's a spiritual problem. But the other problems aren't spiritual problems. How the GBC functions, how the gurus, the sannyasis, the interaction. It's our spiritual problem because of a lack of faith in Prabhupada's direction. He says, this is the culture you follow. Do it, it works. Of course, it takes purity. That's the problem. But material purity will come by spiritual advancement. When you advance spiritually, all the qualities of the demigods naturally manifest. And when they naturally manifest, then it can follow. So it's a matter of also, therefore, give it a few generations, and we'll see. Even now, you can see senior devotees, you know, even though they're mellowing down, they're interfacing more nicely, they're willing to forget past things and all that. And that's a good sign. That's because of their spiritual advancement. Therefore, materially, they're becoming more refined, more pure. So it will come, that's all. It's just a matter of whether we see it or whether we don't. But to go back to Godhead doesn't matter whether you see it or not. But it's being spoken strongly so that we wake up that it is there. Otherwise we're so conditioned that the material life will make us prosperous. You know, devotees themselves think that. Oh, I did so much in Krishna consciousness, what do I got? I go out, I get myself a job, now I have my house, now I have this, now I have my family. See, I got it from material activities. They didn't get it from material activities. They got it from previous, that's all. That's what would have come to them anyway. If they hadn't become a devotee, they would have gotten that anyway. That's just what was due to them. Not only that, they have whatever Krishna wants to do. Right? But, you know, so it's just misunderstanding. And then after they get it, and they have it, and their mind is peaceful, then again they can turn back towards spiritual life.
Just one more, Maharaj. So what you're saying, the devotee sometimes we turn into looking for some material prosperity. You said that the devotee has these personalities aside of him, moksha, economic development, you know, kamas, ready to serve the devotee. The devotee never takes it.
Yeah.
If we really want it, it's gonna be there also.
The point is that the devotee that Dharma Artha Kama Moksha are ready to serve the devotee, but the devotee doesn't take it. But if they wanted it and followed Krishna's system, they would get it. Means the devotee's 45 years old and he decides that's it, I'm gonna go out and do my own thing. But he's been alive for 45 years, he's been eating, he's had a place to stay, something, maybe he can't call it his own. But can we call the one down the street? We have the little piece of paper that says it's ours. Can we claim it's ours? Right? Somebody flies a plane into it, you know, so the government comes away and decides they want to put a highway there. You know, I mean, it's just, what that means, then we have to have faith that material gain is safe. Yeah, so that itself is a great step or a leap of faith, that you actually have faith that material nature is going to do you right. Like that. She hasn't for billions of lifetimes, and that's why we became a devotee. But then suddenly now it's all changed. It's going to be nice. But I mean, it's just someone was telling me yesterday. Every 6 months somebody dies in Alachua, a devotee. Every 6 months. And they're not old. They're not like 80-year-old wrinkles like that. These are like, 45, 50-year-old devotees. Like that. Good health, just bang. They just die. Heart attacks, don't wake up in the morning, this and that. Every 6 months. So it's like, what is the idea? That's why Krishna in the second chapter says, give up this desire for gain and safety. And whenever there's complaints to society, this, that, it's always gain or safety. I didn't gain this position I've been around. I didn't gain this money. I didn't gain this facility. I didn't gain this position. Yeah, I don't feel safe. At any moment, the temple president could throw me out. Yeah, because when you were temple president, how many people you threw out on the street? Like that. So that's the whole thing. It's just, it's like, what is safe in this world? Okay, it's your house. And then you don't pay your mortgage, then the repossession guys are not going to come, right? You're a devotee. You're just going to show them your T-lock, and the repo man is not going to take your car, and the guys in the three-piece suits are not going to come and, board up the windows in your house and throw you out on the street, right? Isn't it? Right? They don't do that in the material world. It's safe. Only in the Krishna conscious movement is thing unsteady, and you don't know from one moment to the next, what will happen. That's like that in the material world. Like that. So we have to remember is that if we're looking for that Dharma, religion, is going to give us economic development, we'll get, but then our spiritual advancement will be minimal. It depends what currency you want to work in. You want to do devotional service and spend it on the devotional platform, that's one. If you want to spend it on the material platform, you can also do that. So one has to look at these things and then make one's, see one's values, make one's choice, and do what's right. It means moving, not staying in the temple, living outside, having your own business or job or like that, doesn't mean it's not Krishna conscious, doesn't mean it's not following the Vedic culture. But it's the mood in which you do it makes it whether it's Vedic or not. That's all. Right? Whether it's connected to Krishna. I'm doing this because as a grihastha I'm supposed to maintain my family and make them Krishna conscious. So for that we need a place, we need some money, they need to eat, they need medicine, they need so many things. So therefore, I'm doing that so that those will be taken care of, they can be Krishna conscious. But that has to be how one thinks. Not to just, we've heard all that. That means that one's not thinking that. But if one thinks like that, then it is Vedic culture. So that's the thing. It's just whether you can balance the two or not. Yeah, you become Krishna conscious and you dump the family, you just run off, and then after being, fired up for, 2-3 years and you marry someone else, start a new family. This doesn't matter because your old family's already married someone else anyway. But this is just the extremes. It's that how in your situation to make that Krishna conscious. Krishna conscious is changing the consciousness. That's what Prabhupada said. You don't have to change anything else. You change the consciousness. And automatically, if your situation needs to be different, then you'll get there because the consciousness is proper. But if the consciousness is not proper, you change the situation, you haven't changed anything. Just because the grihastha left his family doesn't mean he's a sannyasi. Doesn't mean he's renounced. Just this family gave him trouble, that's all. And he thinks it's that family. It's not that all kids are crazy. It's that these kids are crazy. Or all women, and men relationship has problems. But it's just this one. So therefore, I leave it. Right? And therefore, I'm renounced. And then when I find another, woman, another family that I think would work nicely, then one's back in. Because the principle of, it's a tattva. Household life is a tattva. Women, men, kids, money, position, these are all there. It doesn't matter what the position, what the money, what the relationship, it's all the same. little variation.
Whereas when renunciation comes, the three castas, so you have to keep it also.
Yeah, when renunciation comes, it means it's because you know family life is nothing to gain from it. Money, there's nothing to gain from it. You know, all these different things, there's nothing to gain from it. That's because sannyas means giving up the activities that create the result. So that's then that's sannyas. But just renouncing, that's not sannyas. That's tyag. Renunciation is a duty of, but it's not sannyas. Sannyasis have to renounce, but that is not sannyas. Sannyas is giving up the activities that create the gain. So therefore, then understanding this, a grihastha could be a sannyasi, doing all their duties because they understand all of everything is for Krishna. So if they can do that, that's what you're looking for. That's the, and then naturally as they get older, then it will manifest as a sannyasashram. But the idea is from brahmachari life, one's already a mentality is sannyas. Because one doesn't do any activity that creates your own gain. Whatever you do, it's only for the benefit of Guru, Krishna, and the Vaishnavas. Even though, as a grihastha, you may be responsible for the money that has come due to your activities, but it's not your money. You know? Therefore, okay, it's not my money, but it's supposed to be used for these engagements and used for devotional activities and like that. So you just see, right, the cashier, it's not his money, but he sees that it's spent properly. So the same way, it can be done.
Gajaraj Shriman Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainita Gaurav.